الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون. أياما معدودات. وقال تعالى: يا أيها الرسل كلوا من الطيبات واعملوا صالحا. صدق الله مولانا العظيم. With regard to معمولات that we have to do, we discussed a few, and we discussed also the four sets of ayats with the virtues. Then there are another 10 ayats which were very famous amongst the Sahaba radiallahu ta'ala anhum. And they say, we did not know of anyone, any intelligent person, who did not read these 10 ayats at night before going to sleep. We should try and read these 10 ayats in the morning and at night, after Fajr, after Maghrib, or after Isha. But at night also we should read them. The virtues of them are: a person who reads them, then that the person who reads it, he will be saved from shaitan the whole day. And if it's at night, the whole night. The place he reads it, shaitan won't come in that place. The second is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will protect him from all sudden undesired aspects of his wealth and his family. That is, any bad news about his family, about his wealth, Allah will protect him from that. The third is, if it is read on a mad person, that person will also gain sanity. And the fourth is, the narrator of the hadith says that the person who reads this, he won't forget his Quran Sharif. That's a separate, inshallah, I will remember, or check up and I'll say. So what are these ayahs? The first is Alif Lam Mim Tal Muflihun, 5 ayahs. And then Ayatul Kursi Tal the Ruku. And then Lillahi Maafis Samawa Tal the End. That we should try and read every morning, every evening. Alif Lam Mim Tal Muflihun, 5 ayahs. Ayatul Kursi Tal the Ruku. And then Lillahi Maafis Samawa, the whole surah. We should try and read that every day. Allah Ta'ala will, where we read it, that place will be saved from shaitan. And malaika come. At any place, given time, in any place, either the malaika are there or shaitan is there. If the malaika are not there, if we have done such things, music is playing, TV is on, then shayateen are there, malaika are not there. And if we read in Quran Sharif, and there aren't pictures displayed or anything, then the malaika are there, shaitan is not there. And the person also, and the place also. And secondly, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will save us from any bad news, sudden bad news in the family and of the children. And the third is, if it is read on an insane person, he will also gain sanity. So we can see how powerful it is. That of all these things, there are only 2 conditions. One is our yaqeen must be there. And in that we are very weak. Read it with that conviction. And then we will see that it will happen. And the second is our gunas block the effect. And to save ourselves from guna is very easy. Just make some tear tawbah. Regularly, all the time, tawbah should be on our tongue. Then the effect of everything will take place. And then you have set off it. Inshallah, we check it. Then this ayat that we have been discussing, that Allah has commanded us to keep roza, and we should try and improve all the time. And all our ibadat we should try and do with this in mind, and we should say verbally or in our mind that, what is it? It's the last of the iman wa ihtisaba wa Do it with iman, that I know it's the command of Allah, and that I'm going to get sawab. And it's the last amal of my life. What's the word? Okay. Muwadda'i. Salatim muwadda'i. The last. And roza also we keep it with this in mind. This is my last roza. Or at least add the word perhaps. Perhaps it's the last roza of my life, so let me do it the best. We read our sunnah namaz also before asr. Maybe this is the last asr namaz I get. So let me do it the best. Tilawat of Quran Sharif, I'm going to read 5 minutes. Perhaps this is my last time in my life. So let me do it the best. If we do that, we will just be improving all the time. And not only, it won't be good, it will be improving all the time. Because every time a person thinks that this is the last namaz of my life, last time I'm getting chance to make iftar, let me do it properly, everything, so Allah give us topic, inshallah. So, our rozas also improve them all the time. Let us keep the proper rozas of our eyes also, the tongue also, the ears, the mind and the heart, and then the stomach, and that is to eat halal food. A little bit we mentioned about the etiquette of eating. There are many etiquettes. We'll do well to do the Kitab al-Ta'am is available and in quite detail. A lot of aspects of eating are written and which are very, very relevant and very, very important. What we actually have to discuss now is the eating which Allah says in this ayat. One time, Hazrat Maulana Masihullah Sahib Rahmatullah Ali gave this bayan. And he said, let us talk today of that which people love to do. That is to eat. Everyone loves eating. So let's talk about what the people love. They always say, always only talk about roza, namaz. So let's talk today of something. And what a bayan has been gave for about 2 hours, just on the eating aspect. Very, very, very beneficial. And he started with this ayat where Allah is addressing all the rasools. A Rasul and a Nabi, the difference between a Rasul and a Nabi is more common and a Rasul is more particular. Every messenger of Allah is a Nabi. A Rasul is also a Nabi. They bring news from what people don't know from Allah's side. And a Rasul is an added greater, more greater than a Nabi also. He brings a new Sharia. A Nabi carries on with the Sharia of his previous Rasul. And he also invites people. Allah gives him also wahi, revelation comes. But he just carries on with what the previous Nabi was teaching. A Rasul comes with a new Sharia, which Allah Ta'ala has given him. So here Allah is addressing the highest class of people. And the malaika are generally more superior than insan. But those insan who become pious and righteous, they are much more higher than the malaika. All the Anbiya alayhi salatu wasalam, the Sahaba, they are more higher than the malaika also, the righteous and the pious people. So in other words, the highest class of people Allah is addressing them. Ya ayyuha rusul, kulu min at-tayyibat. Eat from tayyibat. Yeah, Allah didn't say from halal. Halal is already in the bag. It's already conceived, understood. It must be more than halal. It must be halal and tayyiban. It must be halal also. Tayyiban can't be if it's not halal. So it must be halal and it must be tayyib also. Kulu min at-tayyibat. And the immediate effect of it will be ba'amalu saliha. Then you will be able to do righteous deeds. Our deeds, many people, we want to correct our life, we want to change our life. The one of the first things we should see to is our food that we are eating. In that one point that on one occasion, one alim of the UK was traveling to Bosnia for social welfare work, some dini work, makati work, and it happened. Allah made it such that he sat next to a Jewish rabbi in the aeroplane. And the conversation started, and in the conversation, that Jewish rabbi told this monana, a monana, he introduced, he was a monana. He says, perhaps we have studied your religion, and perhaps we know your religion better than what you know. He's telling a monana, who is with the Ahadi, that we know your religion better than you. And he says, what we have understood is that Allah's help is not with us, with the Jews. That is the thing we have understood. Allah's help is with you, the Muslims, but not the full help of Allah, half help of Allah. Because you people are such that you are practicing on deen and you don't practice. So half you practice, half you don't practice. And every individual almost. Sometimes you become pious, sometimes you become reckless. And then he says that the whole ummah also, there are those who are very pious and those who are very far away. But they are Muslims. They also are judged on the basis of Islam. They are Muslims, but no namaz in their lives. So Allah's help is half with you, half it isn't. And because of that, what our object is to build the temple of David, that is the Baytul Muqaddas, that is what they want. And still we can't get it because Allah's help is still with you people. Not recently. Recently now, when again all the Muslims were praying, and these they come in from time to time, the Israeli army, the police, and they chase out the Muslims, they harass them, the women folk, etc. And he started shooting at them also. And then Allah sent from his side something like a fly, bigger than a fly, and he bit them, and they went out of their mind, the pain they felt. They just left all their weapons also, and they just ran from there. So they have cried many times, many things, but they fail all the time. So they say, we have to take away Allah's help from you people. And the way we can do it, they said we have worked on a 4-point plan in order to take out Allah, stop Allah's help from you people. The first, he said that, we will involve you people, all of you, the young man, woman, everyone, in sports and entertainment. That your mind is just on sports and entertainment. And as we who are sitting here, who are supposed to be like people think, or we might think, we are more pious than other people. But how much aren't we also, at least, if not anything else, what the scores are? Which matches are taking place? We are also so much involved. Our women folk also involved. Sports, excursions, all the sports, entertainment, in that we will do. And the minute you do that, your namaz gets neglected. And the person who is normally reading his Yasin in the morning, Quran Sharif, that also gets neglected. And what does sports give you? Besides some broken bones, some knee problem, some other elbow problem, that's all what this sport. The rugby is so dangerous, such a dangerous sport. All the sports are like that. So that's the first thing. The second thing he said, we will take out your woman folk from the houses. The woman, her modesty in the house, and that when she is running the house, a housewife, she's the wife of the house, and she's the husband's wife also. And when she looks after her house, one person always telling his wife that you do nothing the whole day, you just sleep. And in this time she'll say the whole day you're just on the phone. So he said, you just sleep the whole day, you do nothing. So she wanted to make him understand. So one day when he came home, after work, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, he found the house is in a mess. Children didn't eat, children still in their pajamas, the kitchen is in a mess, dishes are not washed. Ways are not made, the whole house is... So he's calling her name and she's not responding. When he went in the bedroom, he found her under the blanket. So he says, you sick? What's wrong? What? She said, every day you say I do nothing. So today I just sleep all day. So I decided to do that today. Then you see what's the condition of the house. And every day when you come and you find the house spotless, the children are neat and tidy, they have eaten, the house is spotless. How much work we have to do the whole day, looking after one child. And sometimes a mother is looking after 2-3 children, 4 children. And today, many women, mashallah, involved in dini work also, going for program. For a woman, really, what she's got on her plate at home, she hasn't really got time to attend programs and go for anything else. That work is so much for her in the house. But they do that also. So, a woman's work is in the home. When a woman works at home, we say she does nothing. She's a slave, and she does nothing. And when she goes and slaves for somebody else, then we say she's enlightened, and she's like a bright woman, and a very modern and very advanced woman. And Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam gave the woman on so many things of their housework, the sawab of jihad. What men have to go out into the battlefield, which is so hard. Allah's Rasul gave them the same faith, staying at home. And because that work of theirs is such, a woman has, her position is very great in Islam. So he said, we'll take your, and just judge for yourself, where are our women today? From small little children, and today excursion, and with the schools and that. And who is in charge of that young 12, 13, 15 year old daughter of yours? The principal, who is a non-Muslim. And to win favors, and what's happening in the schools regularly, on a daily basis, based on what is happening. So this is the condition. The third thing he told, that we will make you earn haram and eat haram. And today our earning, one very senior mufti, he says, I've done a great favor for the ummah. That interest was haram for them, I made it halal. That is now, I call it, just change the name, dividends, profits. Just a different name. But now they don't have to labor under that conscience that we are eating haram or we are involved in haram. Now it is halal. Mawlana Shami rahmatullah alayhi, addressing the ulama, he says that, oh, Mawlvi, by your making anything, any haram, a halal, it never becomes halal. It remains a haram. What happens? You go out of the fold of Islam. Ulama has explained, you do the worst haram, but you understand it as haram. You're a gambler, you drink. You're a womanizer, but you understand it's haram. All life you do that, not one namaz you make, but you're a Muslim. But you just make one haram a halal, then you change the deen of Allah Ta'ala. Now you go out of the fold of Islam. And as long as a person understands I'm doing haram, there is great hope he'll make tawbah one day, because I'm doing haram. Something is going to hit him somewhere, and he's going to make tawbah. And in that one moment, all that haram of 50, 60 years, no matter how terrible, it will just go down and Allah will make all that mark. In fact, Allah doesn't only make it mark, Allah changes it into good deeds. And Allah adds more from His side also. But if you understood it as halal, there is no chance you're going to make tawbah. That is halal. Now what, you can't make tawbah from halal, you make tawbah from haram. So this is a very, very dangerous thing. So the urn, and then the food that we eat, that also is not only, there may be still a few people who know those days when chicken was eaten very, meat was eaten very rarely in the house. Mostly it was daal and vegetables. Today daal has become a swear word. If the mother has to cook some daal, mud or beans or something, mommy, what's this? What you made today? It just doesn't have it. There's pizza and there's burgers, then something that smiles at everyone. The food that, and the other was vegetables. And both those things are healthy and good. And meat was a very rare commodity. But today, there isn't a meal without meat. If there isn't meat, it's a big problem. As the demand is far greater what they can supply. So they have to resort to other things. So much so that Kentucky chicken, maybe 15, 20, 25 years ago in America, a court case was brought against Kentucky. That the chicken they are breeding is a chicken without wings, etc. it was modified just in order to supply the food outlet. And whether they call it KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, but it's not a chicken. So it was debated in court whether it's a chicken or not. And the verdict of the court was it's not a chicken. And they were banned to say chicken. And then it became famous Kentucky Fries only. No more Kentucky Fried Chicken. Because by law, they were not allowed to advertise it because it isn't a chicken. So even the chicken, they changed this whole hakikat and its reality, its mahiyat. They changed that also. And all they have in mind is money. So the food food that we eat, so the money what we buy, one person went to a butcher to buy meat, a Muslim man, and bought from a Muslim butcher. So he told him, you must give me halal meat. So he said, ask him, is your money halal? Today our money is also so contaminated. Without a bank, who hasn't got a bank account? Today you can't live without a bank account. You can't live without a credit card or a debit card. You are involved with the bank. So contamination of all this interest and debt definitely affects you. You're not taking, you withdraw the interest they give you, but it gets contaminated. And there was one business group, people I knew, now maybe 40 years ago, they only dealt with cash. But how else could they? Taking deliveries in a big shop, wholesale shop, they have to pay 200,000, 300,000, pay cash, and who are you going to pay the delivery boy? You're going to give him 300,000. So they should make arrangements with the company, but how long could they maintain it? The whole system they have made that you have to work through the bank. You get involved with the bank. So they may contaminate it. We take our precaution how much we can, interest we keep away, everything we do. But the contamination is there. And the food actually that we eat, and especially the whole target is on the chicken. This is a whole subject on its own. We can't cover it yet. But the chicken they have used, and today we can't stay without the chicken. And we have to have chicken. Then only it's the meat. So that was the third thing. And the fourth thing that they had decided on, that we will choose out those ulama who will serve our agenda. We will know who to pick out, and they will serve our agenda. The other ulama can carry on, either they keep quiet or they can speak again, but that doesn't mean anything. We will have our ulama. And the public is such that first the attack on Islam was by the Crusaders. So every Muslim knew these are our enemies, the Christians. Then they used the Orientalists, who were non-Muslims, but who wrote in favor of Islam. Many kitabs they wrote, many books they wrote in favor of Islam. But in between, here and there, they left something that created a doubt in you about Islam. Like, for example, one of them wrote a whole book of about perhaps 200-300 pages on the praises, the great work of Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, sahabi. Now we will say that look at this person, he's striking, he's a non-Muslim, but he's praising, he's a great. But he left one sentence that is poison, he used to fabricate hadith. So now your trust is gone off the hadith, and Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, most of the Hanafi fiqh is on the hadith, he's a gracious faqih of the ummah, on his hadith. So now all your trust is gone, that these are fabricated. So that way they work. Then they started working with the youth in the Muslims, who are normally, their tendency is to go to modernism. They want freedom, they want liberalism, they want modernism. They use them throughout the world, in all the countries. And they got them to do their work. Now is the time when they are using our ulama. And not our ulama who studied in Azhar, Egypt, or who studied in Medina University, but who studied in our madrasa. And we know that if any person say, a person may be senior in the work of Tabligh, and he says some masala, People will say, yeah, but he's not a Maulana. If there's some controversy about it, he's not a Maulana, we can't rely upon him. Some Haji stuff. All know he's a very pious person. But they say he's a Haji, he's not a Maulana. But when a Maulana says, Maulana told him. And so many people, and so many Maulanas, you can't speak against the Maulana. He's a Maulana. You must respect the Maulana. And Maulanas can get away with anything. The people is ingrained in them that you mustn't speak bad about the Ali. Ibn Hajar, Hafiz Ibn Hajar, Haythami, Rahmatullah Ali, he has said that Allah will protect this ummah by those ulama who will always speak out against the wrong. It comes in the hadith, when wrong is being done, then Allah Ta'ala and the ulama don't speak out against it. Allah Ta'ala won't accept their faraiz on the day of Qiyamah, and their nawafil also will not be accepted. There is a great warning when in one village, one area, where the people committed a lot of guna, and Allah sent his azab onto them with Jibreel alayhi salam. Allah knows everything, but Allah to make us understand and open our minds, and their workings are different. So when Jibreel alayhi salam came, he saw one person who did not disobey Allah to the wink of an eye in his whole life. So he went back to Allah and he asked, must I punish him also? Allah said, start with him. That when my commands were being broken, he never even got a frown on his head. He just carried on with his own ibadah, or we just sitting in our monasteries, in our masjids, in our churches, and then the people are doing all wrong and we're not worried. We are an accomplice. In fact, in Syria, before all the problems now, this Bashar and all that, and before COVID also, and before the Arab Spring also, well, before all that, there was a lot of dini work carrying on in Syria, and in Damascus, particularly Damish, where every masjid used to have tafsir of Quran Sharif, and huge amounts of people, and halkas of zikr, and halkas of fiqh, all not used to take place. But at the same time, there was the person who sells tea outside the masjid. He should give to the ulama, the person who is making that free tea also, and other people also. But the ulama never told him one word of deen. He was there, but he shouldn't make namaz. He was sitting right outside the masjid, selling their biscuits and selling their tea and whatever else, all those things. They should make khidmat also of these people. But nobody ever told them about deen. That you're not making your namaz, you're not keeping a beard, your beard is not right, your clothing is not right, your dressing, etc. That is when Allah's azab comes. We see the wrong being done, and the worst is when you have the power. If those people, somebody just kindly tells them, they listen. But nobody even just tells them. Today we are born insensitive. We see wrong being done. In our house we see wrong done, we don't speak about it. While walking to the masjid, you can't tell everyone, we understand people take offense. But the person at least, that thought must come, how can we correct this? In which way can we correct it? But we see the wrong being done openly. The wrong is being done. We know how much of wrong. But ask myself, what am I doing about it? Do I ever speak out against it? We attend functions, weddings, etc. We see the wrong being done. What we say, I couldn't speak. If I spoke, there would be trouble. So I rather kept quiet. It's our duty to talk and learn how to talk, how to present. Don't go and make fights and that, but there is a way to do it. So we have to learn. So these are the four points that they are working on. So food is one major thing which they are working on also. So we have to be very conscious of the food that we eat. Imam Shafi'i, rahmatullah alayhi, says that if a person doesn't want to do haram, anything wrong, but if he's eating haram, he will do the haram. Many times we feel it ourselves. And this was the way of our buzur. Like for example, if they must fajr, or they must jama'at, or takbir-e-ula, immediately they will go into their history, immediate history. What did I do wrong? Did I eat something wrong? Or did I reprimand somebody wrongly? Or did I hurt somebody's feelings? What did I do wrong that this has happened to me? So we want to do the right, but we just can't seem to get to it because we have to see the root cause. And today, many of us, we work on the ummah, and sometimes we go in the wrong direction. The youth, we want them to come into deen. So how we bring them into deen? We arrange some sports, fixtures and matches and all that. So we bring them in the wrong way. We bring them in the right way, not in the wrong way. We take them out for excursions. Many times boys and girls together. All other things, the whole excursion thing is not an Islamic thing. It's a Western thing. We use the wrong method to try and get the right result. Get the right results, use the right method. And today, there are boys and girls in Azadu, in our country. How much of deen and desire of deen they have got. One boy is coming repeatedly to me that his parents, especially his mother, want him to go to school. He's in matric, university, and he just doesn't want to go. Another girl is finishing her hijab tomorrow or so. She doesn't want to go to university, but the parents are forcing them. So there are those youngsters who've got the jazba of deen, and they can work easily, and they work amongst the other students. So it is all up to us. Use the right ways that tell us, and always, Allah says, it comes in hadith, لا يزال طائفة من أمتي ظاهرين على الحق. A group of the ummah, they will be always staunch on deen. That will always be there. So let us be among those people. And they, لا يخافون لومة اللائم. People can criticize them, speak bad about them, it means nothing to them. And they will stand for it. And that is our duty to do that. So Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq. So the food that we eat, we have to be very, very careful. Today it's common, we go to somebody's house, we say we can't ask. It will be like rude. But to ask is, from where do you get your meat or something? And if they have to put something and it looks like crocodile meat, then you won't ask. Then you will definitely ask. But when it is a matter of halal and haram, then, or a person is a diabetic, he is not eating the sweet things. Ask him, I'm a diabetic, he will make arrangements for you. I've got blood pressure, I can't eat salty. The food is salty, I can't eat it. He's accommodated, everyone. For health, we are prepared to accommodate one another. For deen, then we are shy ourselves. We are prepared to eat that haram. And we don't worry of the consequences what it is. And it comes in the hadith that the haram that we eat, there is no other place for it but the fire of Jahannam. And that the flesh of ours, which is nourished by haram, there is no other place for it but the fire of Jahannam. That we are not worried about. Our health things, we will tell them that we'll come, but say, I've got a diet, I'm a diabetic, I'm a blood, I've got high blood, I got cholesterol, I can't have ghee, I can't have oil, I can't have deep fries, etc. And they also happily accept it, and they make the arrangement. But why for deen, which is the most important, we are shy. And we take offense if somebody tells us. And we take offense, what do you think, we're eating haram all the time. And this is so much across the board, we try to take our little precautions. One place we went and they thought that, yeah, we don't have to ask questions because it's a Maulana who's hosting us. So no questions. But the next worst thing that happened, not only in places the food came, in the Kentucky boxes they put on the table. Where we thought, you don't even have to ask that, from where do you get your meat from? And the Kentucky boxes were there. If it was still in the platters, we should have thought it must be halal. Maulana's house, there's no doubt about it. But that was the condition. And in these matters, just to give you a few examples, not of the halal and haram, but those days on Radio 702, this program came that they interviewed the waiters of a restaurant. The waiters, they interviewed them that there must be customers who come and they very like rude and all the different aspects of it. So in that one set of waiters that were interviewed, they were caught on CCTV that the burger they prepared after putting all whatever the meat and that, then they take out the gill from the throat and they spit on there and they sprayed it out on there. And then that was in not the Hilpro of today. Today Hilpro is worse than the Amazon forest. But the Hilpro of those days, which was like a very top Stanton area, the Stanton area, where the very elite, the white people, were the patrons of that restaurant. So they asked them, why do people do this? They say the zulam they made us on the days, in the days of apartheid, we are taking out the revenge in this way. So we are putting that. So that is what the food is like. Similar to that, today you check in at the airport, everything is now by computer and on the internet. But in those days when it was being done manually, mechanically and all that, it was done. So one person, old lady, she saw one man, young man, and he's handling that girl who's checking him in very roughly. Like some people got the attitude, very bossy attitude, and shouting, and trying to, as if they owned the whole airport and everything. So, and she was very calm, very cool. She didn't speak a word. So when the lady went there, this old lady, she said, I admire you. That's how he was treating you, but you didn't, one word you didn't say. She said, but I took my revenge. He said, what revenge you took? He said, he's going to Australia, and I booked all his goods to Tel Aviv. So he'll go there and wait for his goods. So we treat people like that in return. How many people will go to a restaurant, and especially a boyfriend is taking his girlfriend, now he wants to impress her, and he's shouting, and he's ordering the waiters, do this, bring that, what people do. And in that interview they say, when such people come, they ask, what you people do? They say, we prepare the plate of food, then we take it to the toilet. And from the toilet pan, we take the water and sprinkle it on top. And then we go and give it to them. And when they release it, not only eating it, releasing it, then, and notice this, wherever there's like the waiters, if you see them standing together, two, three, and they laughing, and they hitting their heads out. Don't think this is some joke they're making. About you they talk. And they laughing at you that what a fool we are making of this person. So and we go and eat all this. Our Muslim restaurant here in Johannesburg, Mayfair. See? Fortsburg. One friend of ours is passed away, and that you all our marhum's gentlemen. He said there is a rodent, rat problem at home. So he called the pest control. It was a Muslim company. So while they were working, so they were talking. So he said that I had a call last week at this one of the restaurants. And he says when you walk in, where the people eat, spotless, clean. But the minute you open the kitchen door, he says rodents the size of cats, they are all around there. And the food is not on the shelves, it's not on the table, it's lying on the ground. You go and order a chicken, they pick it up from the ground where all the rodents were. Then they put it in the microwave, make it warm and just garnish it with all, make it look fancy, smart and come and give it to you. But he says it's absolute dirt that you are eating. And he says, I saw this with my eyes. And this is happening. These stories can't come to an end. There are so many. One of our family member had a filling station in the same place here, Fordsburg, and he said there, and when they go there, and how they just come and park also wrong places, and the attitude, what it is, the people who go and eat also there, and it is a result of what you eat also. And it makes you worse also. And then if husband and wife don't fight, parents and children don't fight after eating all that. Imam Shafi'i rahmatullah alayhi says, if you're eating haram, you want to do right, you want to change your life, you can't. First, look at the root cause, our food that we eat. Very, very important to check. And today, this is one thing that we are just not worried about. We just, as long as we just say it's halal, or we just go to a Muslim home, it's all right. We don't worry. MashaAllah, there are people who take their precautions and are considerate. In fact, one lady, she wrote, she says in the UK, when it was this COVID time, one Ali was very strong on her and on the correct thing. But she said he also in his masjid, he enforced the COVID restriction, the protocols. She said, I just couldn't understand it. Then I saw that it came to my mind. In our time, he came and visited there for some programs and that. And the people he stayed with, they are our family. And we know the income is not right. The food is not right. And he stayed and he ate there. And after that, all this happened. The effect of that food is definitely there. And we have seen it with our eyes. People have got one way of thinking, the right way. But one time they went and spent time at somebody's house and ate the wrong food. And the whole attitude changes. Food is very, very important. Therefore, not in one ayah, Allah says, Ya ayyuhan nas. Allah Ta'ala has addressed people also, kulu min at-tayyibat, washkuru, and make shukr to Allah for His ni'mat. Allah has addressed everyone that see what you eat. Don't just eat anything. In fact, Tariq Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, in one of his bayan, he said in one place where there were a lot of monkeys, and monkeys were troubling the people, come in the houses, take some food, and run out, and a lot of problems they were causing. So the people, to try and get this under control, they put poison everywhere. When the monkeys came, a monkey, it also sent Dalme Kada. There's something wrong here. So it smelled it, and all of them went away. They came back with a baboon, with a big physician, doctor. He came and he checked it, what is all this. All went away again. They came back again with the antidote. They were still eating everything, and the poison didn't have effect. They had the antidote with them. So monkeys also are careful what they eat. But we as monkeys, we just eat anything. And we are just too happy what we eat. And we are worse than the monkeys also. So the eating is very, very important, a person be conscious. What comes in our house, and that's another aspect also. Today, I don't think really it is, but people advise a lot about this also. People who make jadu on food, who send food to your house, they make jadu on their food. That also you have to be careful. Jadu is overplayed, but if it is also, so see whose food you are eating. We were one time in Nampula, Mozambique, and our host, he explained to us that when he was a small boy, that time he was about 56, he says, when I was 6 years old, I got polio, and I couldn't even go to the toilet myself. My mother had to carry me and that. And then my father told my mother that there was a very great buzur, black person, but very pious, right here, real, Allah wa'ala. Take me to him and let him make dua. He went, he made dua, etc. And he says, see, that was 6 years, now I'm 56. 50 years, I have no operation, no medical treatment. You can see me, I'm walking, I'm healthy, hale and healthy, nothing wrong with me. But he says that buzur there in the jungles of Nampula. He says whenever any food came home, he would first inquire from where it is. And this was the habit of Nabi Ali Salatu Wasalam. Lot of hadaya came for Nabi Salatu, but always ask from where is it, who sent it. That is very, very important. Verify first what it is and who sent it, and from there you can gauge whether this you should just be sending it ahead to somebody else, or whether you should partake of it or not. So, and then he says, the same buzur, he says they were living on the mainland, but the Muslim concentration was on the island. That island is the place where the Afrik, where Islam entered Africa from that island. Then it came onto the mainland of Africa, and Islam spread here in those days. So the main concentration of Muslims was there. For school, madrasa, they had to go there. And he said, we were poor, so there were boats, They travel with the motor also. And they under all conditions, they got a motor. When the other boats, the cheaper one, they wait for the wind, the sail, on the sail. When the wind is blowing, then the boat also will move. So we couldn't afford the other boats, the more expensive ones. And he says, this boat will only move when the wind comes. And he said, how many times we saw? We are all waiting, no wind. When this buzur comes, he puts his one leg on the boat, and the boat starts moving. The winds come. He says that time was the Portuguese who were, government who was ruling, and usually in dunya matters they got more precise, they do everything properly with precision. So he says the train traveling in the jungle, going to Beira or wherever else, and no signal also, robot of the, on the railway line for the train to, train just comes to a dead stop, and he's just standing, nothing, and nobody knows why. Then you see this buzur coming from the through the jungle, and he puts his one step on the train, and the train starts moving again. But all this, what he says, the basis of it, the food he should eat. He was very conscious of his food, what he ate. So by food, you can become a great buzur if you eat the right food. And otherwise, we can go in Jamaat, we go for Umrah, we go Khanqah, but if we're not eating the right food, and we're making all the other mujahada, we won't get anywhere. Food is very, very important. So make this Ramadan that we become conscious of what we eat, and be very particular of what we eat. And it isn't only halal, halal and tayyiban. Today is also, it has become common that all the pizzas and all the burgers and that, those families who avoid from the takeaway, they make it at home. But it's still that junk food, though it's made at home now. Eat our normal food. Our food is, eat that food. And try and train the children. And the children, nobody, no Sputnik came and brought them at the age of 6 in our house. They were born in our house. How we grow them up, they're going to grow up. It's not from outside, it's not some outside influence. How we grow up our children. So grow them up properly. And let them have the taste for good food. Just imagine, Indians are known for the samosa, for the biryani. But today that also hasn't got any value. Today, our good, good people, ulama, tell their aunt pizzas and their aunt, once we were in this island here, Comoro Island, and the host of ours, he's got a pizza shop. So for breakfast he bought and he invited a few aunts. So these things, just by nature, we can't even really, even to see it is difficult to eat it. So I wasn't eating, and the other ulama was so happy. I was surprised, such big pizzas, and if one was gone, and I wasn't eating, that also they put it away. I was surprised. But anyway, that is our nature today. When food, and then again, the right food also, healthy food, that also you can't go overboard. To eat, to eat lemon. To eat, in the Hadith Sharif it comes, that eat, one doctor, Christian doctor who came to Medina Sharif, and for 6 months not one patient. Then when he met one Sahabi, he said, you look like an intelligent person. How is it 6 months and yet, and not one patient I got? He says, we are taught, our Nabi taught us, only eat when you're hungry. And stop eating when some hunger is still left in you. And overeating, and that is out of the question. So he says, you won't get a patient here. It's better for you to pack up and go somewhere else. You're not going to get a patient here. So eating also, the right food also. But this overeating, continuously, yes. Mawlana has to make an announcement that food don't dish out too much. Our eyes are too big. And how much we dish out. And in most cases, it gets wasted. At home, we have to tell the children also. And we have to train our children. Very, very important to train our children. Their habit also is to dish out a lot. Tell them, dish out a little. You can dish out again a second time, a third time. But not that you just dish out like this. And we see with our friends also when we go. And they dish out. You wonder, did they exchange the platter for the plate? It looks like they took the platter and they just put a little bit back in the, for the plate for the other people. We just go like, why? And when we are eating, we are so... Hazrat Muhammad says, Khan Sahib Rahmatullah Ali says, if we had 1% of the concentration and devotion we got when we eat it, that 1% in namaz, our namaz should have been splendid. When we are eating, it's famous in Jamaat, when we, there's a da'wah, and as soon as the mustafis are there, immediately from one end of the dasturkhan till the other end, they check the whole menu. And they have determined, I'm not going to miss out one thing. The chicken, the mutton, whatever there is, everything I have to take my share from there. And when we dish out more than what we take. Our eyes are bigger than our stomach. There's a lot of adab of eating. This is not the time to go into all the details, but if we do ourselves a great favor, the keeping of roza of the stomach, at least when we are here, to try and control our eating. Eat your food, Hazrat Muhammad Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam say, in this zamana, if you don't leave that little hunger, but eat your stomach full, don't eat your eyes full. Your eyes are always bigger than your stomach. So don't eat your eyes, how much your eyes want. When you feel you are full, your stomach, stop eating. And also yesterday we mentioned this finish that we must eat like when we must drink our water like chewing. That is slowly, slowly sipping it. And our food, we must just eat our food like water, like how you sip water. That is, chew the food properly. Today we don't chew the food properly. Then it goes down, the small intestine, the big intestine, they got their work to do. The stomach has got its work to do. The mouth has got it. There are four processes of digesting the food. If the mouth does not do its work, we don't chew it properly. Chewing so much that it becomes like water and it just slips down. Then the stomach will, you won't have indigestion problems in there. And your stomach will get the maximum benefit. And eat your food like medicine. Otherwise, later in your life, you will have to eat medicine like food. Eat your food now like medicine, healthy food. What is good for the eyes, what is good for the brain. Then you won't need medicine. Otherwise, later in your life, you won't eat food, your food will be just medicine. You find so many people, 20 tablets, 30 tablets they are having. So that is their food now. Medicine became their food. Eat your food like medicine. Don't wait for the day when you have to take medicine as your food. So great, great Islam has taught us what a beautiful deen. Every aspect, even eating, how to set, how to dish out, and how to, when the food comes, the details of it, every detail has been given. But unfortunately, we don't pay attention, and the non-Muslims also don't know. And everything, scientists today are admitting, we are learning from the Quran science. Quran Sharif is teaching us science. Mathematicians, that the Quran is teaching us math. Everything, embryology, geography, oceanology, about the ocean, all the things we're learning from the Quran, how perfectly it has been given. We find we are years, hundreds of years behind the Quran Sharif. It has been given. Allah give us tawfiq to practice on it. So Allah give us tawfiq to keep roza of the stomach also, that is, the, all the aspects that go together about eating. Allah give us tawfiq.